So anything that we want to take out of it or
heavily edited.
Yeah, it's heavily edited. Yeah. So anything else you want to talk about before we kick it off?
Well, I mean, those are two things that I was thinking about. I'm wondering whether there's anything else interesting. I was going to try to take it from a perspective of like, you know, working stiff. It's just sort of like a, you know, beginner in the process and a real totally. Kind of, you know.
You've had exits. Real, like, have you had exits at K Street yet? I can't remember.
Not yet.
Okay. I was wondering if there were any of those in there that you.
Yeah. I mean, a lot about. Of the things are still in the oven, you know what I mean? So totally. It's like.
Yeah. Okay. No, I think it's good. I just really feel like there's so many different flavors of things that happen when a company exits, and there's so many lenses into it, you know, whether you're an investor or an employee or whatever, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Really good feedback. So.
Yeah, totally. Well, hopefully this one will be amusing and also instructive.
Definitely.
It's a simple size of one. So, you know, I don't know.
Cool. Okay. Well, I guess we'll just kick it off here then. And by the way, we have 30 minutes to record. If it goes over a couple minutes, that's okay. But we'll okay. cut it. We'll cut it into like a 20-25 minute episode.
Okay, great.
Cool. Okay. Well, welcome to the latest episode of High Stakes. High Stakes Thank is a you. Podcast by K Street Capital. I'm Paige Soya, your host and the managing director of K Street Capital. And this season is going to be about This is season two now. We're on season two, and it's going to be all about exits. So thanks for joining us, Mark. Mark is our incredible guest for this episode. And before we jump in, I guess, why don't you just introduce yourself and share a little bit about your background and some of the exit experiences you're going to be talking about?
Okay, well, I'll start with my background. I'm Mark Smith. I was born in Rio de Janeiro. I like to start with that. I'm a Carioca gringo, so I have a little bit of an interesting origin story, I guess. My parents were doing a last hurrah, you know, before they thought that I was going to be born, and I ended up popping out in Rio de Janeiro in Copacabana, actually, which is
wow.
Which is pretty cool. Professionally, I've been doing the government affairs stuff for a long time. I started cut my teeth at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. I was very fortunate to be involved at a really interesting time, I think, in history of, you know, this just belief that like free markets, we're just going to do everything and, you know, we're just going to have free trade and globalize and we'll lift all boats and, you know, whatever. So I sort of helped, you know, manage the business coalitions that did all of the post-NAFTA free trade agreements. So that was a really exciting time in Latin America. That was a really exciting time. So like DR-CAFTA, Chile, Peru, et cetera. And also led the Brazil-U.S. Business Council at a time when Brazil was like really like the BRICS and, you know, like a really interesting time. Of course, a lot of that enthusiasm has reversed quite, you know, significantly since that time. And then I tried my hand at renewable energy investing. I got Barclays Commodity Group to give me a commitment for $50 million and thus quit my job. And then, of course, global financial crisis.
Yep.
Had to get a day job. And that day job happened to be a really great, interesting one at Clorox for 12 years. And now I'm off again, you know, dumb enough to try again in the renewable energy space. So that's where
Mark
I'm coming
is being,
from.
For those that don't know Mark, Mark's a longtime K Street investor, and he's being very modest in this introduction.
and just like throughout the time, just developing, just always have an interest in kind of things entrepreneurial. And so I just, you know, love the, just being close to and interacting with and involved with and helping, early stage companies. So, that's why I was like, so excited to get involved with K Street. And, the story that I'll tell today is like, my initial sort of, you know, like on my own attempts to try to do like early stage investing and, you know, some of the lessons learned.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. Awesome. Well, let's get into that. I guess how many exits have you been involved in related to that? And maybe you can share from what perspective, like as the investor, as an employee, as the founder, that sort of thing.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I guess it's, you know, what kind of exits. I mean, I like in terms of my most successful things, it's been like, you know, TARP warrants. I bought like Morgan Stanley TARP warrants, like when Morgan Stanley was about to die, you know, that was like thousands of percent of return when I finally had to sell them. And all the time I was getting 6% interest. Like, I love that investment, like such amazing. And then, you know, like IPOs and stuff like that. But none of those are like all that interesting. So all of my early stage stuff, like nothing has died yet, which I find to be, you know, probably
unusual. Yeah.
Selection. So that's good. But a lot of it is still, you know, kind of in the oven. I have invested with a Redbeard Ventures syndicate, and there I invested in a little company that was involved in the sports card business. And so they had a machine where it was called due diligence, where you like put your sports card in and it would like grade it. And when they're graded, they're like worth more or whatever. And so that one like sold like almost immediately. And I got like 18%, you know, back. And I was like, oh, you know, that's pretty cool.
Easy, right?
I had no, I mean, it was just like a total fly by night type of situation. Not a ton of exits. But this one, the one I'm going to tell you about has all sorts of fun elements of you know, lessons learned, I guess you could say.
Yes, please. So let's start with that one. I think I know which one you're referring to.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is me using my CrossFit gym in Oakland as a, you know, a sort of, you know, supplier of deals.
This is Oakland, California, right? This is
California, East Bay CrossFit, man, you know. So I'm over there and I meet this guy, Shen. He's like a really successful real estate investor in Berkeley, and just a great guy. And you know, we start talking, we, you know, get to know one another. And, you know, I'm out in Oakland working for Clorox, trying to find something, you know, uplifting to do with my time. I'm there 50% by myself. And so, you know, she's like, you know, like I've been talking to these guys in this cannabis. I know this guy, Alex, who's the CEO of this company. Like, you know, would you be interested? I'm like, you know, I've been running around Oakland, which they call like Oaksterdam, right? It's like, it's just this cloud of smoke, you know, everywhere, basically. Right. And you know, the cannabis industry is,
just remind everyone, what's the time period of this?
So this is like 2018, maybe 2017, something like that. And it's like, it's clear that they're going to go from medical marijuana to like legalizing recreate, like it's inevitable. And like, everybody's like in this kind of gold rush period, but no one really knows what's going on. The IRS is still like raiding places and totally. Like, you know, they're like doing business in all cash. It's like, it's really kind of crazy. Like this guy, Alex, he rented one of those Sprinter vans and he would just drive it full of weed and then come back with like all this cash. Like, so just, you can imagine it's like Cannonball Run type stuff, you know?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So I was like, I went over there, met Alex, looked at the facility, and it was like right before they were going to let us in, right? Right before Poseidon and some of these larger VCs that were investing in the cannabis space. And, you know, I was like, I mean, this is a growing industry here.
This
I
is the, Oakland. The, this right is on the frontier. Cool. Yeah, exactly.
Right? Like, what the hell? Like, let's go in. And so, you know, we formed a little syndicate, and the name of it, I had no appreciation of, honestly, in the beginning, but now it's like, I look back in retrospect and it's just so hilarious because it was called HODL Partners. So like, hold on for dear life, partners.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Well, let's see if that is what ended up happening.
Inauspicious, like, starting point, right? So yeah, so we had HODL partners, and we all, you know, kicked in some cash for Sublime. And the whole premise was, and I love this premise still, that they were going to do some really high end edibles, right? So the marketplace is full with a lot of kind of crap, and you know, the prospect of like really bringing in like high end candy making into that space, and you know, quality control and all that stuff seemed like really interesting. And so that's why we decided to invest. And so, you know, it seems like everything was going pretty well. You know, I think I told you.
And so, and Mark, you came in as an investor, not as an operator, right? You were just strictly an investor.
No, yeah. I was just an investor, you know, a seed investor. And
but you understood the space, the regulatory environment, and that's part of why you were like, this is something I want to get in on now, right before these regulations change.
Exactly. Yeah. So it was like thinking that there was going to be this massive, you know, opportunity when, you know, they went from medical to recreational, and that a lot of the gray market would come to the legalized market, and, you know, a provider that had quality product in the edible space would do super well, because there were going to be a lot of new people coming into cannabis because of legalization. So, you know, that was the thesis.
Makes a ton of sense, right? The thesis always makes sense when you put the money in. So, yeah. So what happened next?
So you know, it seemed like everything was going really well, and you know, whatever. Like, you know, they weren't like sending us a lot of updates and stuff, and so, you know, I was like, well, I think I told you I me and my buddy came up with this kind of collagen that we ended up like patenting. And I had always had this idea of like putting it together with CBD and doing this product. So I went to the CEO and I was like, hey, you know, I'm a seed investor. Like, I'm really interested in developing this product. He was like, that's awesome. Let's do a letter of intent. And so we were going to develop. And so we went together to Chicago to meet with this guy who was like making the Otter Pops for Walmart. And he was like, I love that idea. Let's do it. And I was like, oh yes, this is so cool. Like, I have this, you know, early stage investment. I'm going to be able to finally commercialize this kind of collagen in a really unique way. You know, this is great. And so I went there and met with him a number of times. And like, it was always like, he was like, calling and buying things, and you know, it was like that's hustle and bustle, and you know, whatever. And I was like, huh, like, you know, he's always like super harried, and you know, I was like, wow, this is, you know, really electric, you know, startup-y, whatever, you know. Little did I know. So it turns out we think everything's fine. I actually ended up investing another time, doubling down, right? And so, you know, one day we get this message like, Sublime has like is basically like set, like 3 days from running out of cash.
Of course, right? Of course. And this is what time period is this?
This is probably like, God, it's probably like 2019, maybe.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was like, everything was cool. And then it was like,
yep,
we're out of cash. Right. And so I'm like, whoa, what happened? Like, I'm like, shit, what happened to your boy? Like, what are you doing? So it turns out like Alex went and to Germany and he bought like these $1 million like gummy bear machines. Like, and they were like assembling these custom gummy bear machines. Each one was like several millions of dollars. None of them ever completed.
Oh my God.
He basically spent all of the cash of the company on like tied up in all this machinery that never was ever finished or used.
This is not looking good.
I mean, I was just like, oh my God, right? And so they're like, well, you know, we've appointed Poseidon, like the executive, whatever, the credit committee
lead.
And you know, we put together a plan, and you know, you either like provide emergent, you either become a lender to the company, or we're gonna basically dilute you to dust.
This is a VC, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Right.
Yep.
And so, okay.
Sounds familiar.
First lesson. First
I think
lesson.
All angel investors watching this show probably experienced something like this.
Yeah.
Go
first
on.
Lesson, like just the powerlessness of like being in that position, right? Of going from a, you know, hey, I'll give you a couple, you know, 25, 50,000, whatever. Like, and then basically having the large guys in the capital stack basically like totally determine your fate, mm-hmm. and just give you either where it's like an all or nothing propositions, like, you know, mm-hmm. And so, you know, true, I guess, to the name HODL Partners, I was like, well, you know, we're kind of pot committed. Poseidon is a pretty big venture, you know, partner. They're going to put like $11 million inject $11 million into the company to like try to propel it to the point that it can be sold. Like, it might as well, right? So I became a lender.
Okay.
And I preserved my little. So at that point, HODL Partners had like, we had like 0.56% of Sublime.
Okay.
And so, you know, like Poseidon had 1.5. So we had a decent.
As you were earlier.
Yeah, we're really early. So we were pretty early in the capital stack. And so, you know, it was amazing. They literally sent us weekly cash flow reports.
After the VC stepped in?
Yeah, I've never seen anything like it. Like, oh, well, you know, they were like monthly targets and, you know, all this kind of stuff. I actually got 15% back on the money that I lent.
Okay.
So, you know, right, I guess that's
something.
Some part of the exit, right? You know?
In cash?
And then they magically got acquired by Harborside.
Okay.
And so I was looking at my emails, and I was like, at the time I was like, well, this is crazy, because they got acquired for $43 million, right? And I was like, yes,
there you go.
I have point, you know what I mean, like,
right,
I've got a third of 0.56% or whatever, like, you know, this is great. I'll get a 50% return. Like, I held on.
And what time period is this now? Is this
this is 2021.
Okay. So this is over with 3 years, probably.
Yeah. So it sells at 1.78x revenues and a $43.8 million Sublime sells for. And I'm like, okay, you know, like this.
How is this deal structured? I think maybe.
Right.
Where we're going.
Okay. Yes. So turns out, like, as I look back, I'm like, well, what percentage was a stock? Well, it was $38.4 million in stock.
Okay.
So only $5 million in cash, which I think was basically used to pay back all of the VCs, right? Like,
right.
And their yeah. And yep. Me too, but you know.
Yep.
And
that was paying back the debt that you loaned them. So that was returning your principal, but the rest of it was all equity pretty much. Yep.
Exactly. Exactly. And the other thing that wasn't totally clear at that point was how long we would be locked up. Like, mm-hmm. We were literally locked up for like, there was some sort of earn out period or something like that. But it was like, it was a year. And during that year, the Harborside went from like $1.6 a share, right? So like at the time when they acquired Sublime. I looked because I was like, this is so weird because Harborside is worth $50 million and they just acquired Sublime for $43 million. Like, I wonder if they're going to dilute themselves, right?
Right.
And then now, right, they've changed their name to State House. And guess what that stock is worth right now? It's it's like 0.8 cents.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's 8 cents. It's been destroyed like the entire rest of the cannabis industry, you know, only.
And let me guess, you still are locked in. They haven't had any sort of exit where you've been able to cash out.
Well, and the thing is, that's the other point that I think is a really like teachable moment as well. Like, I was like, oh, this is really cool. I would think that would be the dream of every early stage investor, that they would get, you know, their holding acquired by a publicly listed company, right? So that you would be liquid. You could actually sell this stuff. Well, so it's like in the Canadian exchange, and you know, it's like, so one, like,
oh, it's Canadian, it was publicly listed on the Canadian exchange. Okay. Yeah.
And so it's like super illiquid and almost like impossible. The my partner that has a lot more investment than me and has like a longstanding relationship with Charles Schwab, they were like, oh yeah, we'll do you like this huge favor to help you sell this. Like, it's like, it's, you know what I mean? And so that's the other part of it, is just like, even though it seems like, okay, well, you know, I have this great asset, I like the publicly listed, you know, thing that this has now become, that I can just sell. And it's like, wait a second, now what exchange?
So it locked you up for a year on the Canadian exchange. And then by the time you were unlocked, the price point was like,
the whole sector had just been devastated. And you know, the stuff was worth a fraction of, you know, what it was. So, you know, I mean, it's still worth something, you know what I mean? And I still do believe that, like, a vertically integrated business in California cannabis can do well, you know, like when you actually get the ability to deduct, you know, expenses from your taxes and stuff like that. And, you know, they finally get it right in terms of taxation in California and stuff. But like, man, that whole sector has just been completely destroyed.
I think those are such good lessons to share, though, that a lot of people don't want to share. Like, you're a pretty prolific investor. You've been involved in a lot of projects. You've got a lot of different stories, but I think it's super important that we can highlight some of these teaching moments, because, you know, like, most exits are not successful, actually. You know, most of them are not, even if you get to that point. And the ones that are the only ones that get talked about. But it's like, the more you go through them and the more you learn about them, the more success you can have the next time around. And you start looking at things differently, right? You're asking different
questions. Yeah, totally. I mean, there's no way to educate yourself, like, you know, like hitting failure, the short end of the stick, right?
So do you still own shares in the company?
I do.
So
I
you never know.
Like 86,000 shares.
We could have you on 2 years from now, and this could be a totally different
I do believe that whole sector, like, if you can find people that are actually making money there, that like, eventually, you know, there's a lot of demand.
And do you think I know the buyer was probably not the greatest buyer, so that was number one, the problem in that transaction probably, but also the company itself, the underlying Sublime, the underlying investment you made, it sounds like they just weren't great stewards or operators. I guess.
Yeah, I mean, they did do what, you know, was interesting is that, like, I invested in the whole thesis that they would be like a really great high-end edibles business, you know, and what ironically what ended up, they became the number one in pre-rolls in California, which is no, you know, minor thing. I mean, that's the 10th largest economy in the world, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, they did have some things, but like, they just blew up. They blew themselves up with their CapEx and never being able to execute on any of those investments.
That's too bad. It seems like they could have. They'd had better financial advice along the way.
And I think the other thing is that, like, you know, when you're in an industry, like, one day, like, you know, you're just batting people away who want to give you money, and then the next day, like, no one's there. And I think that dynamic took place, you know, in the course of that investment too. And, you know, when everybody's knocking down your door, you're like, oh, I don't need it right now. And, you know, and next thing you know, your runway is gone.
Right.
And, you know, it's over.
Right. Yeah. It's so important to be capitalized properly because you just don't know what environment you're going to be like, selling in, you know,
have the time and just realize that it's going to be like twice as hard and twice as expensive. And, you know, yeah. Maybe you'll get lucky, but like in all likelihood, you know, you'll make several mistakes first, and then iterating from those will actually be the thing that like really gets you there. So
exactly,
you yeah. know, it was interesting from that perspective. But like, you know, I definitely want to come from a place of like total humility, and that like I
love that.
I'm still very much in the beginning and still very much
yeah.
learning. You know,
it's you years and years and years of learning, and you never stop is the thing with investing
yeah.
these types of companies, I think. And things change, right? Like terms
yeah,
change.
Yeah, and you know, like I even though that didn't work out, like I learned a lot, and then I got engaged in something that I do think will work out. You know what I mean? So it's like I'm also investing little stakes in a variety of different things to learn. You know what I mean? And
exactly.
You know, hopefully those lessons aren't super expensive.
right. So one last question for you about this one. Do you have any context or insight on the how they selected the buyer? Was it just a situation where they ran out of runway and they had to sell, and so they were kind of forced to just take what they could get?
I mean, like, I don't want to make any insinuations, but it did seem a little bit like there was
they were pressed.
The folks that brokered this were, you know, I think it's a very small industry, and that, you know, they kind of knew who the likely buyers were. And, you know,
yep.
there's a lot of, you know, connections. Right. And so, you know, but I mean, they did sell it for $43.6 million. So, I mean, you know, but I think it was the stock element and just like the fact that the whole industry got completely destroyed.
Right.
That really
exactly.
was the downfall. If that hadn't happened, I think it would have been.
Do you think if they could have negotiated the term, like knowing that now, obviously you don't know that at the time of the transaction, but had they known at the time of the transaction, maybe they would have negotiated more cash and, you know.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that there was a little bit of like, I think they were just happy to get the deal, honestly. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Have a positive outcome and a fight.
I think there was a real, you know, there was a very different power dynamic between buyers.
Understood. Understood. Yeah. Okay. Well, I guess I think we're coming up on time here. I want to see if there's any other burning questions that I should ask you about this particular exit. Do you think at the time of the transaction, the rest of the company was happy? Like, to your point, they're happy to get it done. Do you think the management team and the founders and the other investors were all pretty much aligned that this was the right thing?
Well, I mean, the CEO, Alex, the you know, Mr. Gummy Bear Machine, like he got, you know, kicked to the, you know, he got fired.
Oh.
So he, you know, in that whole process, he definitely made a mistake. He definitely lost money for everybody, but like the way that they just like discarded of him, like that
hurts.
You know
I
what
mean,
I mean?
That's the thing. And the thing about being a founder is you have to get every single thing right. If you get one thing wrong that you don't know which thing it's going to be that's your downfall. And then if you don't have the right relationships around you, then things like that can happen. And
that was really tough. So even though he had like lost my money and whatever, like I did feel bad for him because it's like, you know, he did create something of value.
Yeah.
He created something
created
that
a
was worth
$43 million company.
$43 million, even though he screwed all sorts of things up. You know what I mean? And to like get nothing out of that, I think at the end is pretty hard.
It's tough. Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. Would you say you have any other, like if you could go back and do that deal differently, but as a seed investor, right? So it's not like you have a lot
yeah.
of sway or power to change the terms at that point when you get a big
yeah.
VC in there. Is there anything you would have done differently?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess one option would have been like Shin, the guy that got me into it. Like he didn't lend them money. He just like when they ran out of money, he was like, I'm gone.
Out.
And I do think that like that's a skill that I probably need to do better in developing. I just have, I don't know, maybe like I'm too much of an optimist or something.
You're a good person.
I have a hard time just like cutting things loose
But
and just
in that case, you lent them money. You got all the money back, right? And
yeah,
50%.
no, I
So
did
it's not
well.
like,
I did
yeah.
well. So I mean, but like, that would have maybe limited
You could have
my
spent it. You could have invested in something else with that
Yeah, I mean,
or
like
whatever.
opportunity costs and stuff like that. So
Right.
I don't know. I mean, all of it seemed pretty stacked to like work out, but just kind of the way that it transpired,
Yeah,
you
you can
know, I
never
don't know. What do
really.
you think, Paige? What would you have of are there any elements that you think like as I recount like my dastardly mistakes right
Yeah,
now?
gosh, I mean.
Are there things that like anything that you would like you were like,
Well,
oh, well, that one, I don't know, you know.
I think in my position, it's a little different because I'm investing for a living full time. So I think about these things quite a lot. But if it was like a side investment where it wasn't my primary job, I don't think I would have done anything different because you just have limited time. But for us, like when we see the writing out, first of all, we're like big on cash flow. So we ask for this stuff all along from the moment we invest so that we can find out not 3 days before it happens. And when we can see it 3 or 6 months in ahead, then we can try to
Wow.
help bring in the right players and
Ameliorate the
resources.
situation, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And just think about who the right potential buyers are earlier.
Yeah. So you don't
And
have the fire sale.
exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
But if you
yeah. I
don't know,
mean,
you don't know. So there's nothing you could do.
yeah. I'm wondering whether, I mean, like as seed investors, I think a lot of times you get like very poor or very bad visibility into like what is actually going down. So I don't know, like that's another thing. Like, is there a better way for like individual seed investors to actually like get that kind of like information about what's going on, you know what I
Yeah,
mean?
I mean a lot. Like I will tell you, you can put information rights in. That's usually what we try to do. So we get information, at least financials and an update quarterly or something like that. But that doesn't mean the company is going to do it. And what are you going to do? Go sue the company and pay a bunch of money when they don't have any money either. It's can't really enforce it. So I think it's actually more important just to maintain a close relationship with the founder and have regular check-ins and have a trusting relationship where they feel comfortable telling you this stuff and not afraid to tell you this stuff.
Well, that's the thing. Like, if he had actually come to his investors earlier on and just being like, hey, I made some mistakes. I'm almost there. These amazing gummy machines are 1 month from, like, you know, whatever. Like,
Right. Like if you had known he was going to make that decision, you could have given him different advice and yeah.
Or like, you know, don't buy three, buy one, you know.
And the last thing I'll say is like we at K Street, and I don't remember how long you've been investing with K Street with us. It's been a while, but back in the early days, we were writing much smaller checks, right? And so the smaller your check, the less say you have, the less the founder is
Oh,
going to care.
definitely, definitely. And even though we had sort of come together as a syndicate, we were still very small in the overall, like, I mean, we can't compete with Poseidon
11
or all
million or
these other
whatever.
guys.
Yeah,
So, you know,
exactly.
they're really in the catbird seat in terms of driving returns and stuff like that. So, you know, all of that, you know,
Yeah.
you definitely have to go in with your eyes open on
For
all that
sure.
stuff.
Yeah, there's no way to avoid. It's inevitable that in some cases that's going to happen and there's no way as a investor you can control it 100% of the time. You can just try to be as engaged and helpful as you can as you have time to, right? As you have time to be. So, yeah, but this was great, Mark. Thank you so much for sharing all of this.
Okay, yeah, I hope it was
Good
helpful. Like, you know, sometimes it's more interesting to hear about the failures than the successes, you know.
Absolutely is. Yeah, I'm so glad you were willing to talk about this one. So it's super cool.
All right. Well, thank you for the
Awesome.
opportunity.
Thanks for being on. And that's a wrap.
Okay, take care.
Cool. So Mark, I'll stop recording here. Hang on. And that's a wrap for today's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. And if you enjoyed it, please leave us a rating and review. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. Thanks.
Thank you.